I've heard too that parents are like, if airline people will grab the barf bag and hand it to their little one and be like, honey, this is the bag you puke in. And people are like, I'll move. Yeah. Where are you sitting? Because
so our favorite story with Alice is like that. So my wife really likes to joke with Alice about how she's really nice and everything. And so like, one time Robin made the comment of like, oh, she doesn't bite, right? So then the next time we flew, Alice sat down in her middle seat. She was probably like 6 at the time, right? And she got sat next to this older guy and she's like, hi, my name is Alice and I don't bite.
Clean it out there.
And Robin's like, oh, not my anymore. Yeah. So needless to say, that guy volunteered to move.
I'll stand by passengers. See me at the podium. Your seat is empty.
Non-Rev Lounge is a travel and aviation podcast.
Monique, Laura, and Tyler are three friends that work for a major airline as gate agent, flight attendant, and ramp worker.
During this podcast, they will discuss using their flight benefits to travel the world, as well as talk about things that happen at work. They have guests on almost every week to share their travels and stories, leaving tips on the best places to travel and things to do. Enjoy.
Welcome to Non-Rev Lounge. I'm Tyler.
I'm Moni.
I'm Laura.
And we're excited to be back. We have a guest coming to join us a little later. But first off, Laura was on an important radio show.
Oh, I forgot.
The Celebrity.
She is. She's an expert.
Thank you.
So that's very nice. How did it start? Because your friend, who I'm not sure I'm a fan of yet, Dawn Gilbertson. She's a writer for
The Wall Street Journal.
She's local in Arizona, though, right?
Yeah, she started in Arizona working for she was the aviation writer for the Arizona Republic, and then she got the job at the gig at the Wall Street Journal.
Okay, and she wrote an article about change seats.
The four most dreaded words, will you change seats?
And Monique loves the thought of people changing seats.
As a gate agent, that's probably our number one thing we deal with at the gate before boarding. Is seats.
Not Southwest.
I know there are times when I go, I think Southwest is doing it right when it comes to seats, because they just let families already have a priority so they can go in and get situated. I don't know how they do it at the end when family shows up late. Yeah. But
would you remember when I flew with the boys last year and they had held the back row for us?
They did.
The last people of the board didn't even know if we were going to get seats or not, and they had done that for us. So because they a little more communication than you may see.
Yeah, that's awesome. They did that.
They wrote the article and then NPR reached out to you and said,
I was really lucky, yeah. So I was on the Larry Mantle show, which is called Air Talk, and it's on NPR. And so I was on that a couple months ago. And so they emailed me, and I was in London. They emailed me, so I didn't really see it until I got back. But it was on the weekend, so he left a phone number, so I texted him. He said, we're going to talk about this. Are you available to be our expert? And then they were going to take calls. And he said, don't worry, we screen our calls, so you're not going to get a weirdo. So I said, sure, I'll do it. They wanted it on Monday, and I was off work Monday, so it worked out perfect. I said, sure, I'll do that. So I didn't tell you guys about it until it happened, because, you know.
You didn't want us to be the weird ones calling in and be like.
No, it was kind of up in the air whether it was going to go or not. And he said, let me call you in the morning. It was only a 20-minute segment, but it went really, really well. And so they asked me to stay because they wanted to talk about like overhead bin space and then reclining seats.
Interesting.
Hot topics.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You did a good job.
Thank you.
And
it was better this time than last time.
Yeah, because last time I didn't agree with you on some of the stuff, but this time I did.
I knew it was that.
Let's talk about just the three of us then, because you talked about it and people should go listen. We'll have the link in it.
You'll have the link in the
show notes so you can go back and listen to Laura. But what was kind of your gist of what you talked about? Because so the article is asking people that ask to switch seats.
Yeah, but they've paid extra for those seats. They pay extra for the window and the aisle.
Yeah, because even when I go to book tickets on points or whatever now, you can see like almost every seat you're paying a little bit extra for. Very few do you. Options or you just say no, but
exactly.
Even like all the way to the back, like a window in the very back, you're paying a few extra dollars on almost all the airlines. So almost all the people that are in those are probably paid a little bit.
Yeah, that's the problem.
Our company's policy a while ago was with our lowest fare, like our basic economy fare.
Yeah,
you were just assigned any seat, and most of the time if you were like auto assigned a seat, it was a middle. And then they changed it about a year ago where they could be assigned an aisle or a window as well without. Okay. But if they ever choose a seat, then there's always a charge
yeah.
for that particular fare type. And that was great for gate agents, having to rearrange people because, you know, you had good seats to work with at the end because that's what would still be open.
Yeah.
But with that taken away, now a lot of times I'll show up at the gate and I'll have like a family of five with three little ones, all under five, and only middle seats open. And it's like, okay, well, how do I now move people that have been assigned and like take ownership and like, nope, that's my window or that's my aisle. And be like, actually, you don't get to stay there because I need to put a family there. So it's kind of tougher in that way. I liked it better when they gave the low fares just middles. Because then if you had to move them, they were excited. They're like, oh, yeah, I'll move to a window. Sure, yeah. That's great.
Then they were happy, yeah.
Yeah, but if you ever go lesser.
Well, that's what when I did my seat. Frontier and Spirit last year, ended last year. And I did like the, no, didn't pay for anything else. Mm-hmm. And I got aisles on both of them. So
nice.
Did like, yeah, just checking in the day before. And so I feel like I was pretty lucky for that.
Because we know you would not pay extra for that.
No, I mean, if I think if, so that's, I'm kind of mixed because working for the industry, if you want to sit by someone, just pay for it. Like,
yeah.
If that's something you really want, then just pay for it. But, well, that's what the comment that, because you messaged Gilbertson, and she was like, non-res don't have to pay for their seats.
She did say that.
And I took it as, Laura took it as, oh, you know what a non-res is? And I took it as kind of a slap in the face.
Yeah, he did.
Well, I mean, that's one of our benefits. If you want to come work for us, then come work for us and you can have that benefit. Or you can be a frequent flyer and you also don't have to.
Pay extra you also services. Get that benefit.
Yeah, as certain status levels, they get different seats complimentary as well. Yeah, so,
but I took it as, yeah, that's I think I said to Laura, I said, well, tell her if she wants to come throw bags in the 120, then she can do that too. On the other hand, as being someone that has little kids, I rely on the gate agents to hopefully, if they can. So I always try to get to the gate early.
Yeah.
If I have kids. If I'm by myself, whatever. But if I have a kid to show up and be like, hold them in front of me like, this is my little kid and me. Yeah. So they can go, okay. Because did you say you can see that the ages of the people?
It's a lot more work. So like, I just assume if there's a party of five or even a party of three usually,
yeah.
I go look at the age.
And especially if we're not listed in first. Because if I have older kids, we'll just listen first. But if we're not, like, then you can go, okay.
And also the thing is, this makes me sound probably dumb, but we can see it in their birthday, not their age. So sometimes doing the math, I'm like, is that kid 7 or 17? Like, I'm trying to figure out, like, okay. Yeah.
7
so,
or 70, I can't tell.
It would be nice if in our coded system, like, on the list, it just showed, like, 4.
But so I like to take the kid up. So I have a 3-year-old, a 5 and 8. The 5 and 8 tablets, they're good by themselves, even I'll buckle them in. It's the 3-year-old, the little girl that she's a handful still. And so I'll make sure I go up and be like, me and the child. And most times gate agents are on top of it. They do it and they're able to move things around even on full flights. If I'm like some of the last people get on, but every so often, like there was the guy in Phoenix.
Yeah. Just like let it go.
And he was like, I'm trying to get paying passenger families together. Like, you're on your own. It's like, okay. So then it's just a matter of you get on the plane and it's hard when they only give you middles because you don't have any to
there's no negotiating.
Yeah. Well, you give up a good seat for a middle. And if it's a short flight, usually people are good. Like it's an hour and a half.
That's the consensus. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's when you're going to Hawaii for 5 hours and like, I'm not giving up a good seat so this guy can sit by his kid. But I think we've always got lucky because people, they feel bad for little kids. So I feel bad because like, yes, we don't pay, but we don't even have the option to pay extra to guarantee that we'll be together. So
I liked it better before when they left like seats available for you guys at the gate to work with.
Yeah, that's it. Clear back a couple years ago, they used to always at least block off the last row for us as the gates kind of your prerogative to do with that row what you needed.
Put prisoners which is kids. Nice.
Yeah, so you had at least 6 together. But yeah, that's not a thing anymore.
Which is too bad. The consensus was most people would move so that people could be with their kids, so parents could be with the children. That was the consensus. But then another one was like this lady called in and she booked a window seat and paid for a window seat because she was going to do work. And the middle seat was a honeymooner and his honeymooning wife was on the other middle across the way. So two middle, same row. Mm-hmm. And so he asked her to change and she said no. And then he asked the guy on the aisle seat to change and he said no. And then they got kind of he kind of bullied her the whole flight. And then finally she stuck her hand up and she needed help and he followed her through the airport. It was like this big thing.
Oh my gosh.
And I'm like, okay, you're on your honeymoon. You should have paid for another seat.
You get what you pay together. For, right?
Yeah.
If you want us to buy some, pay for it.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. Well, because here's the deal too. So when Allie Jo went to Costa Rica, it was important for her to sit next to her friends.
Yeah.
And I think they had already selected aisles or windows. So she went and paid like $9 a leg to make sure she was in like the middle seat next to them.
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah, if it's important enough for you, she even paid for middles. Like if it's not important for you guys to sit next to each other, then get on and pay for it.
Yeah.
It was a good, you did a good job.
Thank you.
And he mentioned our podcast like 10 times.
Yeah. Aww. I love that. I love that he does that.
That's sweet.
He did say she does a podcast with these two delinquent kids, but she did.
We have the expert, the amateurs on the podcast.
It was fun though.
So go listen to that. It was fun. Good job, Laura.
Thank you. Okay, so we're so lucky to have a guest with us today. We have a pilot. His name is Chris, and he and his wife, Robin, they have three children, and they non-rev everywhere. But the most fascinating thing I think about them, even though it wasn't a non-rev story, is for 3 years you lived out of your RV.
I did.
With three kids ages, well, now their ages are 9 to 13.
Correct.
And you weren't furloughed. You were still working?
No, yeah, I was working full time.
Interesting.
Yeah. During the pandemic, there was a couple months I wasn't working. Okay. So it was like a vacation for those months. But for the most part, I worked full time.
Thank goodness. So he's with us today to talk about.
Are you
going to
be nice? Because Chris is a pilot.
I am going to be nice. Okay. I hate pilots.
Who do you think dislikes pilots more, you or Monique? Or is it even?
I don't dislike pilots. What's my one and only thing?
Did they tip?
The tip.
Yeah.
That's all. It's just It's a $1 tip.
I get it.
Yeah, out in London, and they put our luggage on and off twice. And those guys are making $500,000, and they're tipping $1, and we're all tipping $2. So I'm so sorry. That's inflation. My only thing. It has nothing to do with their ability to fly. And I'm going to tell you right now, Chris, the first thing they'll do is buy me a beer downstairs. So you can't say, okay, you're cheap, because their first thing they want to do is buy me a beer, which is, I appreciate. Okay.
Well, that's why they can't tip so much, because they're saving up to buy
beer. Yeah, so why are you complaining?
That's a $10 beer, right?
What if they bought beers for all the drivers?
It's a 5-pound beer because they get a discount. Chris, I do.
Now you're talking pilot's language, discount.
See? And I have one in my family, a pilot in my family. So there you go. But we were excited to get you. So yes. Thank you for flying down.
I'm excited to be here.
So you are a trainer? Is that what you're doing right
now?
That is
correct. I work in the training department now for my current job. So I teach in the simulator.
Is it all different kinds of planes that your airline has, or is it one specific one?
So we're only allowed to do one plane at a time.
Okay.
Both as a flying pilot and as an instructor. That's an FAA thing. We only can do one. So pilots have to come back they start with initial training, which is about 2 months long. And then every 9 months, they have to come back to the simulator to do recurrent training. And so I do both. I do initial training and recurrent training.
Which do you prefer?
I like the recurrent training the best, because then you're dealing with people who are working and you can pick up stuff from them. Because like I still fly. We're required to fly several hours a year. You know, we have a limit a minimum of flying that I have to do just for my currency. But I like talking to people who are doing it actively, because I can pick up the stuff that they're seeing and implement that into my training. And you can mold what's going on today. New hires are great. Initial training is great, because you can like say, this is the way we do it, and you can form them from the beginning. But it's just tedious for everybody. It's a marathon, both for the students and the instructors. And so it's just more work.
What size of plane are you flying now?
I fly the 737.
Okay.
I spent many years on that aircraft.
It's a workhorse, right? It is. It's not the most comfortable airplane that I've ever flown, but it is solid, and it does its job. It does it efficiently. And so, yeah, it gets the job done. And at the end of the day, that's all that matters.
Do trainers get paid differently on different? Because like a 777 pilot is going to make more than a 7. Do you guys get paid differently or the same, because it's all?
We just got a new contract, and every airline is different, right? It's all, you know, all negotiated. And so all the instructors are now on our company is paid best of what I could hold. So it makes no difference what I teach.
Okay.
I get paid what I could hold on the line. So that way, whenever they are assigning you positions, it doesn't make a difference what plane you teach. Cause otherwise people will be fighting over like the 7-8 or the triple. And
that makes
sense. They don't want that, cause we have more 730s than we do anything else.
Yeah.
And so in order to get people to stay in that one, they just pay everybody the same based of what they can hold on their seniority level.
That's a good idea, actually.
So how often do you have to go fly to stay current?
I get 2 to 3 days a month to go fly, and then it's up to me to schedule that.
Okay.
And then I get to pick where I want to go and stuff.
Oh, nice.
So like next week I'm flying, I'm doing a trip down to Tulum, Mexico. Brand new airport, Tulum. Right?
Cool. The new route.
I want to go see what it looks like. So I'm going to fly out of Chicago, and I'm going to go down there. It's just a day turn, but I want the experience. I want, because it's new, I want to see it. And I, whenever I do my flying, I really like to try to experience new things. Like, so like last year I picked up a trip to the Azores. We fly there during the summer. It's oceanic, it's North Atlantic, all stuff that we don't do very often on the 7-3, but it allows me now, I can, whenever I'm teaching those lessons, I can say, well, when that, you know, whenever I'm doing this trip, I've been there, I have that experience. So I always do that with my flying. I want to stay current for not only my landings, I have to stay landing current, but I want to always learn something new that I can bring back into the training department.
So are you bumping someone off that trip then when you choose to do it?
Yeah, so we call it buying off. So whoever it is, I send them a message, say, hey, I want your trip, can I have it? And they'll be like, yes, because then they get paid not to fly.
Oh, so, okay. They so still they're get the money. Cool with it. Okay. Yeah. Gotcha. Gotcha.
Yeah.
I was thinking you could be really ticking some people off.
No, I have to get their permission. And then I've never had anybody say no because they get paid not to work.
Yeah.
And then they have the option, the way our contract is written, they have the option to go pick up something else and then they'll get paid for like that. Double,
kind of, yeah. Top of.
So right. Yeah.
That's a good idea.
There's a lot of people who, because the training department is in Denver for my airline. And so most of us live in, a lot of us live in Denver. And so like, knowing what the instructors want to fly, the senior people all bid for that, knowing that they're going to get bought off, because then there's a strategy, a gameplay.
Well, I like the way that works out though, because then everyone seems to be happy with it.
Yeah,
that's smart.
So is working in the training department better for you because you get to be home more, or what is the reason that you like it?
So one, I like to teach. I've taught at every job I've ever had. I love to teach. It's a passion of mine. But yes, the schedule is better because I work my shift in the simulator and then I drive home because I live there.
Yeah.
And then I sleep in my own bed and I see my kids. We homeschool with all of our travels. That's the best way for us to do it. And so like the kids will work on school like whenever we want to. So like weekends for us doesn't matter. And so like I'll work a lot of weekends to give me the better time of day, and then that gives us the week to go do things midweek.
How smart.
And then my we'll get into this, but my daughter is autistic, and so because of that, we can schedule all of our therapies and stuff during midweek, during the day when everybody else is in school, and then I can get to go. And so for me, that's a big part of it, is I'm able to be home to help her, support her, which allows us more flexibility in our life as well. But yeah, it's all about being home, right? Yeah, as a pilot, this is the first time in my career that I've been home, right? Like coming up before I got to a regional airline, and we were guaranteed 8 days off a month, and I got 8 days off a month. And so like I was just gone all the time. And so it's kind of making up for that.
So I had a pilot once tell me that the divorce rate for pilots after they retire is like super high, because now all of a sudden they're home and they're partners are like, actually, I don't like you. Like, right. I don't like you around this much. It was good when you had more time at home. You didn't have that experience with your wife. She was like, this is good.
It was a struggle to transition.
Was it?
Okay. It was.
I don't know. You had three kids. I'm sure she appreciated
that. That's what I'm saying. I think she was like, this is great.
Okay. Yes. Like, it's all, you know, because she was, you know, single parenting, for lack of a better term. Yes, she was really excited for the help and all of that. But to go from her being in charge of everything to now all of a sudden there's two of us there. And then like it was a struggle for me just being there, knowing what to do when, but it was also a struggle for her letting go of things because she was the only person. So like she did the dishes the way she wanted to do the dishes and stuff like, and so whenever I come home and I do them differently, like it's okay. You know, so, you know, we've worked through this stuff, and our therapist was like, he's doing the dishes. Like, just be glad he's doing the dishes, right? It doesn't make a difference if he washes the pots first or whatever.
Yeah,
right?
Whatever it is.
Whatever it is.
You have three kids, and you said one's autistic.
Yeah.
So what are the age ranges for those?
13 is my oldest. Alice is the middle at 11, and Walter is 9.
And so what are some of the challenges that come with traveling with an autistic or
especially open, like with the non-revving?
Yeah. So non-revving is, you just have, like for us, it was all about setting expectations. So, like you never know whether you're going to get on. We've done it enough now that's, they understand that. But at the very beginning, it's like, hey, we may be spending all day in the airport, or we might end up in a different place than we expected. Like, and especially for Alice, the autistic one, is like, it's all about the expectations, setting what could happen, and then giving her everything that could happen. Even if it's a 5% chance, you got to tell her that that's a possibility. And then like, because changing is hard for her. Like she has her plan, that's what she wants, and that's where we're going. And so just always being able to update that plan all the time. Okay, Alice, this is what we're doing now. Okay, Alice, this is what's going on. Well, this didn't happen to us. It wasn't our fault, but we have to move on to something else. Sometimes she does really well with that. Sometimes she doesn't. The more we do it, the easier it gets. Like she's way better now than she was 3 years ago, when, you know, 4 years ago when we started all this. And so it's all about setting expectations for her and knowing what she needs. Like, I know she needs to eat something every 3 hours. So like, we will take the longer layover if we have to connect somewhere, knowing that we're going to have to stop and get food. And that food is not going to just be the McDonald's on the corner. Like, it's going to be something we're going to have to go find. We're going to have to look up the menu and figure out how we can make that work. And like, so we build time into that. It's knowing what her needs are and making sure that we've allowed ourselves the time in order for her to come through on her time schedule.
So it can be a calm process instead of like a rushed or like right. frustrated.
Because there are times that you have to rush. And we just say, all right, Alice, we're going to be rushed and we just have to fight through this. And she's like, it's going to be hard. I'm like, I know it's going to be hard. And that's where Robin is really good. Robin is Alice's person. And so if she's Robin and Alice are together, we can pretty much do anything for a short period of time. Okay. But eventually she will have to come back down off of that and we'll need the time to get calm herself back down.
So it's possible. See, I think some people feel like maybe it's not possible to non-rev with a special needs child.
Right. It definitely adds a dynamic. Uh-huh. Luckily for us, in our regard, Alice is high functioning, right? So she can have a normal conversation. She's verbal. She loves to be by herself. So like when we get on and we sit all five of us in random seats, I'm dropping her off by herself with her iPad. She's like, perfect.
that's a gift, yeah.
And in fact, we always are, you know, like if we have to, a couple of us get to sit together, it's always a fight of who gets to sit by themselves. And so like that's the stage we are in our lives right now. Nobody wants to sit by anybody else. And so like in that regard, like just knowing that she's capable on the airplane, she can take care of herself, like this is what I need. And more importantly for her, like knowing where mom is, knowing where dad is. And when we travel, this is a big hack that we really like, is we always wear orange. Everybody wears orange. So that way, whenever I'm dropping you off in random seats, I'm gonna be like, this is my kid. She's an orange. My wife and I are both an orange. All these rows back here. And so it makes it really easy to see each other.
So smart.
And then like, yeah, cause flight attendants all the time, they're like, oh, you guys are together. Yes, yeah. We are together. And so my youngest, Walter, is a 9-year-old boy who's got 9-year-old boy energy. And so the most popular question in our family when we travel is, where's Walter? Because he just goes, and it's keeping track of him. So the orange for him is important because then you can see him in a crowd, because not very many other people wear orange.
Yeah, that is smart. That is super smart.
When we were in Italy with Drew, he wanted a 35 euro Ferrari hat. And it was bright red, you know, the Ferrari.
Yeah.
And my husband's like, oh, we'll buy it for him. I go, no way. I'm not flying 35 euro. And anyway, that was the best purchase we ever made because we could see him everywhere in Italy.
So do you do anything differently when you get to the ticket counter, the gate agents, the flight attendants to help you if it's possible?
Not a lot. We do go up to the gate agent if we think it's going to be really crowded. Or actually, we go to the gate agent if we know we're going to get seats. And say, hey, look, my kid has special needs. Can we board early? Okay. And almost always they say yes.
Yeah. Good.
But if we don't know if we're going to get seats, that's not possible. And we've done it enough now, it's not as big of a deal. But if practicable, we will always ask to board early with the priority or whatever they call it, with the pre-boarding. We are not allowed to ask people to switch.
Oh.
However, you drop a 4-year-old off by themselves, exactly, yeah, you'll be amazed at how many people volunteer to switch.
Yeah.
Because they don't want to deal with them.
Does she like to travel?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. For Alice and my wife, Robin is the same way, which is really funny and ironic. They hate traveling, but they love to travel. They like being in new places. Okay. They like doing new things. But sometimes the process of getting there is a lot for them, but it's always worth it. Like, and they'll say that all the time. Like, this is really hard, but I mean, we're in Paris.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people are that way. My wife, Katie, she's the same way. Like, I can just go fly for the day. And
enjoy that process. Yeah, yeah.
The TSA in and out a bunch of times, no big deal. But you can tell it's just like, she doesn't love that. But being somewhere, she loves that. So,
and kudos to you for raising your children and your daughter to be able to change like that.
Right. It's a skill set. Like traveling for us is the education, right? So because we homeschool, like we're in charge, we make sure they know how to read and write and all that stuff. But the traveling is the education.
Like,
it started with the RV. And then as I transitioned to my current job and life changed, and now at the training department, like our life is a little bit different. And so now it involves more airline travel than you. I mean, we always loved airline travel, but like it was just harder, and it's gotten easier now that my job has changed. But that is the education. So like for our kids, my kids have been to all 50 states. They've been to 11 different countries. And like in those 50 states, like we've been to over 100 national park units. And so like you're talking historic sites and then just national parks. Like you were talking there, Grand Canyon a couple weeks ago, right? So like we did the Grand Canyon a couple years ago and like, yeah, it's that awe-inspiring moment. And we've done so much of it now. And my oldest has said this because we were talking about coming home from Asia. We did a month in Asia, which was amazing. But by the fourth week, they're like, we're done with this. Like, we've seen so much of it that like, it's all the same now. And it's just that that all of it has worn off. Like, it's still cool. They still appreciate it. But like, we've just done so much of it that awe of it is not there anymore, which I think is actually a good thing that they still want to do it, even though that the magic of it is not necessarily there as it was when it first started.
So you just did a big trip to Asia?
We did. We did a month in Asia.
That's crazy.
So real quick, what kind of things did you do? And then we'll get into some specifics.
Yeah. So we, it was a,
first of all, how'd you get there?
We got there in the back is how we got there. So when we started our trip to Asia, we have friends that we wanted to see in Guam and in Japan. And then we did a meetup group that we were part of that was having a meetup in Japan as well. So that was the catalyst of the trip. We, knowing that we didn't know what to do the first week we were there, we were going to go wherever there was open seats. The idea was take business class, right? Because who doesn't want business class? But anyway, so we were trying to get there. So we were going to go wherever there was open seats as long as we could get to Guam from there, because Guam was our first destination where we had reservations. So we ended up in South Korea. We really wanted to do Australia, lots of open seats. It was a perfect flight time, but there was no way to get from Australia to Guam without taking 2 days, and flights were full, and it's further from Tokyo to Australia than it is from Tokyo to San Francisco.
Oh, wow.
Oh, really?
Wow. Yeah. It's a 10-hour flight from Australia to Tokyo.
Wow.
And so because of that, the timing of it just didn't work. So we ended up in South Korea, and we loved South Korea. It was absolutely amazing. We cannot wait to go back to South Korea. Yeah. So we did Korea and Japan and the part, and Asia is just clean. Like, it's just so much cleaner than Europe is. It's not as majestic as Europe, but it's definitely cleaner. Like there's no trash anywhere. People are super kind. They're super nice. Everything is in English, right? So it was easy for us to navigate. All the subway stations were bright. They were lit. Everything was clear. It was super easy to get around. And yeah, we really liked Asia. It was a lot of fun.
Did you do any of the street food in South Korea? I feel like on YouTube, so I watch different things on YouTube, and it's always like these fun street food kind of stuff.
So we walked through some of that. Alice is being autistic. Food is really hard for her.
Oh, okay.
And so we are always very deliberate with food. Okay. And so it's really hard for us to say, ooh, this is a, you know, street food. Would work for Robin and the boys. They would be all over that. But because of Alice and even myself a little bit, food is a challenge.
Okay.
We have to be very careful of what we do with food.
Okay. So with Alice, when I was reading on your wife's Instagram,
mm-hmm.
that she's got spatial.
SPD is a sensory process.
Sensoring process.
Sensory process.
She likes the feel of certain things, fabric, which, gosh, yeah.
So yeah.
I get that.
Basically what it means is her body, everything that she feels is heightened times 10 to what a normal person would feel. Like to go like just poke her, would feel like somebody punching her to her. And so because of that, and food is a sensory thing. You see it, you smell it, all of it. And like she can't even like get it close to her mouth to taste it, because if the color is a little bit different than what it was before, there's something wrong with it because the color is different. Like, so she sees that, and and so because of that, that's why the food thing is so hard for her.
And Robin says that they travel with a suitcase of food just for her.
So on our Asia trip, we were gone a month. There's five of us, and we packed up 4 suitcases. One of them was nothing but food.
Yeah.
Well, if you're gone for 4 weeks and you need to make sure you've got stuff for her for that long.
Yeah. Luckily for us, she likes rice and pasta, which pack well.
Oh, yeah.
Let's go back to Asia, because you said anywhere in Asia, but what were some of the things you did that really stood out that were some of your favorite things?
So favorite things, when we were in South Korea, we did Seoul. We did a DMZ tour.
That's right.
And I love the DMZ tour, right? So my son and I are both really big history people, right? So to go up to the border of North Korea and say like, this is North Korea, and then like to learn about the war and all that stuff and all the things that the people did to prevent North Korea from completely destroying South Korea. That was really cool to us to be able to touch it, feel it,
So you got to go right up to the border.
You get to go within a mile of it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Were you scared at all?
No, it's super touristy.
Okay.
But one of the things you get to do is you get to do it. The North Koreans have dug tunnels underneath the border. So that way, if they attack, they could like bunch of people in all at once. And so they found one of these tunnels in the 70s. So like now you can go inside this tunnel and see like how big it's not very big. Like I'm not a big person and I was hitting my head. And so like they talk about how the North Koreans had built all this by hand and how the South Koreans found it and all that stuff. So there's a lot of history. Like American history is great, but it's very European focused, right? Most of Americans have come from Europe. So our history is told the Europeans version. Like when you got to Korea, like, I kind of always knew people always lived there, but until you get there, you don't really really appreciate it. And like we went to the Korean War Museum, which is all of Korean history. And so like it talks about when the first people showed up on the Korean Peninsula, all the stuff and like tribes, and this is how they fought each other, and the kingdoms, and this is how they fought each other. Like there've been wars in Korea as long as there's been wars in Europe, but I've never learned about any of that stuff in history class. And so like that was really interesting to be able to see that connection. Like, you know, they're people too. They have their own history, their own culture, and it's different than ours, but that's okay. And that part was really neat, connecting us as people.
I know we fly to Seoul. Yeah. How far was this, like the border from Seoul? Like, did you do a day trip up there?
It's a half day trip. So we booked it on TripAdvisor or some one of those, you know, travel places. And they picked us up a couple blocks from our Airbnb. And then it was a bus up there. And then we booked the whole day trip because if I was going to get in a bus, I wanted to do the whole day.
Yeah.
And then we went to a mountaintop where a unit from the United Kingdom basically sacrificed everybody in order to hold the Chinese off for like an extra 3 weeks. So that way the Seoul could be defended. And so we saw that and saw their memorial and talked about that history lesson about, you know, you do things, even though it's not good for you, to help other people. Like that's part of that lesson. Mm-hmm. Is, you know, that sacrifice. And so, and then there's a suspension bridge that we walked across. That was, it's a really big suspension bridge over a valley right next to the monument. It was really cool. It was all part of that same DMZ tour.
I think North Korea, I haven't wanted to go to South Korea, North Korea, and that whole like is so, it was like a year ago. I was watching all the documentaries and you were like, be careful. But yeah. the whole like how that world works is so crazy. And so I'd love to do that tour. That'd be really cool. What was the cost in general in South Korea? Was it a pretty expensive place?
South Korea was really cheap. Like, okay. So we do Airbnb once again for Alice and her autism thing, right? So this is an autistic thing. I do the Airbnb so Alice can have her own room. That way she can have her time away. All the kids can have their own bed. There's five of us. To do a hotel room more than one night is just not comfortable, right? Yeah. It's so the Airbnb is always where we go. We, because of the food issue, we have a kitchen. We can cook our own food. That's right. Uh-huh. That's a huge thing. Cause then we could like even bring lunch with us because we can make it ahead of time and we can have breakfast at home. We can bring cereal and milk or whatever. I think our Airbnb was like $80 a night for three bedroom place.
Nice.
With everybody has their own bed. We did the Seoul Pass, this is the fourth city that we've done some type of like the city pass thing and works perfect for us. It's cheap. We know it's a fixed cost. We have a list of things that we can do. The kids get to pick two or three things that they want. And then we just figure out where they are in town and, you know, hit the close stuff all together. I think there was like $30 a person for 72 hours or something like that.
That's super good. Yeah.
Yeah. And then that came with train tickets from Incheon. Cause when you fly to Seoul, you actually fly to Incheon, which is like a 45-minute train ride. So that came with the tickets to come in from the train. Like, so Seoul was super cheap.
Well, cause even a lot of places, yeah, you're paying almost $15 at least a person to get train ride from airport to the airport into cities. So
yeah,
that's awesome.
I wanted to talk about your immersive art museum you went to.
Yes. So this was in Tokyo. It was called Team Lab, Borderless. It was pretty new. And it was probably the most sensory, amazing, overwhelming, exciting thing I've ever been of.
Like, and it's an art museum.
It is an art. They call it an art museum, but it's all like lights and projectors and you're like inside of the art. And so like every room is like, there's like 10 different rooms and they're all different. Like one of them was like these glass balls that just like hang from the ceiling that light up. And then like you can like hold it and like feel like
I love that.
And then there's another room that was all mirrors and like it looked like they were kind of like rope lights that would come down and like you'd walk between these lights and with the mirrors and stuff, you would like walking inside of this like lights and stuff. And then there's like things on the project on the walls, like flower petals floating around. And then after 5 minutes, they turned into like rabbits moving. And then it was just like, it was somebody, whoever, super creative, right? I'm not a creative person, but like for me, it looked like an LSD trip, right? Like yeah. You just never know which is going to come up next. And that's what kind of felt like being inside of something like that.
And Alice was okay with that.
Alice was okay with it because each room was separate and we were there. And whenever she was getting to the point, like this room is too much for me, we just move. And then, perfect. And we can move to that. And like, and the hallway was dark. And so like, it was always easy to come back to dark. And so like, yeah, it was, we were worried about Alice, but our friends who we were visiting said, you got to do it. So we did it and we had a great time, but definitely like Alice was like, all right, this room's done. Okay, so we moved on.
yeah, and you prepared her.
We did. We knew it was happening, and everywhere we go, because sensory is a thing, right? So we carry headphones everywhere we go. So oh, she smart. Has noise-canceling headphones. And so, especially in cities, she has her noise-canceling headphones on, and it's either audiobook or music or something, and then she's in her own little world. We can do whatever we want if she has her audiobook and her headphones on, because she's in her own little world. She's happy. She's content. She'll just sit on the bench next to us doing whatever, because she's good.
Sensory, okay. She's been able to block it out.
Yeah.
She can block with all the lights, is she still good?
On something like that, because lights aren't as big a deal to her okay. as sound.
Yeah.
Sound is more.
Okay. But it sounds like you should or should not take some ecstasy and go.
No, I would not encourage that, but you know, what do I know?
So what, you said Japan was in Tokyo?
So we did a week, that was in Tokyo. And they also have one in Osaka, which we did Osaka as well. But the one okay. in Osaka was outside. It was in the botanical gardens. Ooh. And so they had this like, wow. they had all these different things that were part of the intermixed with all the different trees and plants and stuff. And we were there during cherry blossom season,
wow.
which is really cool. Yeah, it was very pretty. And they're like, they have these like egg things, and they were like 7-8 feet tall, like eggs, and they would glow, and they would like every time you would touch it, it would change colors. Mm. And like, so at nighttime when it was all lit up, cause this was at nighttime, you can only do that one at night. It was really cool because then you can interact with this object, this orb. And then they had other ones that had different, it was just interesting. Lots of lights on those. Was it
super busy though? Or did you feel like you got to experience it? Not like I'm waiting in a line so I can touch the egg kind of
thing. So the egg one, they had like 40 of them.
Okay.
And so it was just a big open area. It was amongst a bunch of trees. And so it was enough space. Like it was busy. You have to get tickets early. There's a waiting, the time entry, right?
Okay.
But it's because like that one is in the garden. There's space.
Okay.
So you don't feel crowded. And the other one, and the one in Tokyo was not, there are times that you felt like there's a lot of people here. But once again, it's time entry and people move through. So it wasn't that if you got crowded, you just went to the next spot.
We're going to share Robin's Instagram.
Yes.
If that's okay.
Yes, yes.
Because she posts some really great photos in there. And then she talks a little bit about Alice.
She talks about Alice in there. And then one thing I don't want to forget, this is a big thing for us. We learned about this when we were in Europe last year. There's this thing called the sunflower lanyard that Alice has.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about that. Good.
Yeah, and so it's a lanyard that she wears. It has sunflowers on it, so it's nice and happy. But it's a program that shows that I have an invisible disability. And it could be mental, like Alice's, or it could be physical. Like I know people who have epilepsy, right? You don't know that they have something, but they have something, right? If they fall down, you need to know why. And this lanyard kind of shows that, hey, there's something special about me. And so we wear this lanyard everywhere we go, especially when we're traveling. So like, it's not as popular in the United States, but it's getting more. So I looked the other day and like almost major US airport has training now on this. Like they list all the airports. So like we were in Denver and they just got it. So like you see the sticker with the little sunflower at their information desk. I'm like, oh, they have this now. And Phoenix has it as well. And so like it's becoming more and more thing. And so like when they were going through security last night, Alice was having an issue and she was wearing her lanyard and the TSA person was like, yeah, I get it. I see it. And that was it. And so then they gave her space to be able to do her thing. And this was a really big deal for us when we were coming. We were leaving Paris. We were coming home from Europe. Paris was full. We're not going to get out. So, you know, plan B, well, London's open. Let's go to London. So we Z-fared to London and to get us business on the way home.
Yes.
And that's right. It was worth the extra hotel stay. But leaving Alice, it was a hard day for Alice, just having a hard time, right? We get to security and she's having a hard time. And so like, because of this lanyard, we get all of our stuff through security and they actually let Robin carry Alice through the metal detector because Alice was having such a hard time and they knew what was going on. And so it made that process so much easier that we didn't have to explain what was going on with Alice. Yeah. They just knew because she had this thing around her neck.
That's good. I like that
they have that program. I remember when we got that program in Phoenix.
Where does she get that? Is it someone hands them out, or you go online? Or?
Yeah, it's like a website. You would go order them from her.
So you can order it from the website, I think, but places who do it hand them out. So okay. We found it at first. We were first introduced to it in England. We went to Bletchley Park, which is where they cracked all the German codes during the war. Highly recommend. This is my second favorite thing I've ever done in London. It's a train ride, maybe 30 minutes to Bletchley Park. If you have the day, you should go. They have all this stuff. And they talk about the history of the war. And it's basically where computers were created. Like, these are the smart people who invented the computer at this place. And they had something in there where we said, hey, we have this. Our daughter is like this. I'm like, oh, we have something for that. And they gave us this lanyard, and they came with a book. And we're like, well, this is cool. Like, and so we were wearing it. And then we went to Denmark, and we went to Legoland. That was Christmas last year, because we give experiences for Christmas instead of presents. And we went to Legoland, and they're like, oh yeah, we do that too. And so now we have one that's sunflower lanyard that has Legos all over it. Wow. And that's the one she wears, because it's got Legos on it. And so, like, you started seeing this all over Europe, and we're like, this should be a thing here.
Yeah.
And it's starting to become more and more popular. It's a pretty new program from what I understand.
I like it.
Yeah, it's super cool. Well, I could just, even as like a gate agent, just to kind of have, so I can see it right off the bat and know, like, okay, they need extra time, or they need a little extra something.
Without them having to out themselves, right? Yeah. It's just a visual indication without them ever have to explain everything it is. And like, there are some airlines that do it, but no US airlines. Like, if you pull up their website, a lot of them are either because it's a European foundation. A lot of them start in Europe, and there's a South American one or two. But yeah, no, I would love for some more US airlines to do it, but it just hasn't happened yet.
I ran into the lady who's in charge of the wings for autism in Dallas, and I got the date for this next year. It's like in September. That's one thing, because I volunteer. Mm-hmm. We take autistic children to the airport. They might go through the whole process.
Right. And they taxi around.
And we taxi them around.
Yeah.
But we did learn that this one mom was so grateful. She goes, I just know that we can travel if I have time, special more time to get down, pre-board.
Right.
If we can pre-board, then I'm good.
Right.
And I thought, wow, that's, you know, she learned that.
Yeah.
She thought it was a hard no. That she couldn't travel.
I think the biggest thing is like, when you have somebody who's special needs, like, there are people who are willing to accommodate if they know you want accommodation, right? And so, like, for us, it's time and place. Like, do I need something today, or are we okay? A large percentage of the time, we're okay. We fit in enough that we can make it work most of the time. We've learned to go with the flow. But there are times that we can't. And whenever those times happen, we know we've learned with Alice is that we have to stand up as the parents and say, hey, look, I need help. Right. And whether that's going down early, or, you know, waiting through security, or waiting for the next flight, or whatever it is, like, we've learned to say, like, I cannot push her anymore. I need help. Or we're just stopping. Like, this is it. We're going to wait for her. We're going to wait for her. And having the ability to do that is important.
I kind of want to talk about how they ran.
Yes.
The sprint.
My sprint. This is
a sprint story.
This is a great story.
Okay.
So coming home, I promised.
Coming home from
Japan. We were in Osaka, and we did not get business going over. Not as big a deal, because it was a daytime flight. We weren't going to sleep anyway. Not that big of a deal, right? But going home, it was a night flight. And I'm like, I promised my kids business. Probably not the smartest thing I've ever done, but I promised them.
Monique?
Right. But did it look great?
So the day of, we were going to do Tokyo Haneda to Dulles. There was 20 business class seats open.
Yeah, promise that.
Right?
I'd
even made plans in DC to visit friends. Like, we were going to do like 5 hours in DC, have dinner with friends, and then fly back home. And so anyway, we wake up that morning, and it went from 20 open seats to -1.
Oh, jeez.
And I'm like, well, not fun. Right. And so now I'm scrambling. Right. So like, I promised my kids business seat. Luckily for me, I'd kind of already was working on plan B. So we do 3 flights a day out of Hong Kong. And for the next 3 flights, they were all open. I'm like, well, just go Hong Kong. It's only 4 hours, right? So we Zed fare on Hong Kong Airlines from Osaka to Hong Kong. And we can carry on. Because in Hong Kong, if you carry on, you can go through transferring, whatever. You don't clear customs, and you don't have to check your bags or do any of that. They just
let you go.
It's quick and easy. You just walk to the next gate, right? I'm like, well, carry on. We can do that. So we we're over here dumping liquids into every little thing we can think of because we have no TSA pre-check in Japan, right? And so we make this work, right? Here we are, all of our suitcases.
Five people,
right? Five suitcases and carry-on bags, the whole deal, right? We're ready. We're good to go. We get there and Hong Kong Airlines has a rule. You cannot carry anything in the cabin more than 15 pounds.
Oh, wow.
We were way over 15 pounds, right? And I'm like, I even tried, I'm like, I'm staff, I'm crew, like, is there anything? I tried everything. And they're like, nope.
Did they just look at you already and already know? Were they like,
yeah, because they knew we were staff. So when we checked in, they're like, oh, you're staff traveling. We're like, yeah. And there you don't get your seat assignment. They give you your seat assignment at the ticket counter and they don't do it until an hour before departure time. And so then you're already stressed. You're already running, right? To get through security because they don't like, because when in Japan, when you go through security, you clear customs. And so you exited the country. So they don't let you do that until they know you're leaving, which makes sense. So anyway, we're like, they're like, you're going to check your bag. They're like, we can give you priority tags for them. I guess I don't have a choice because like, I can't stay here. Right. Yeah. Our Osaka flight, we do have a flight to Osaka, but it was like oversold. Like we're not even getting on it, let alone business class. And so I'm like, all right, so here's our bags. So we check our bags. Then we run through security because time at this point is ticking down. Yeah. So we run through security. We walk fast on that one. We get to the gate as we're boarding. We're like, fine. Have a nice flight. People were great. We got food. We sat at the bulkhead with the flight attendant and him and Robin had a great conversation the entire time. We land late in Hong Kong because that's the way it works, right? So we're like, all right, we are already like the airplane has stopped and we've pre-warned everybody like this is going to be rushed. We're going to run, like get yourself mentally prepared for this. Because if we don't, we're staying in Hong Kong and nobody wanted to stay in Hong Kong. And so they're like, we want our business class. And so the door opens and of course we're like, we're those Americans, right? We're just kind of like pushing our way up the alley. And then like, there's all the moving walkways. We're running on the moving walkways.
Meanwhile, the kids are seeing the business seat as a,
right.
As a carrot dangling in front of
it. It's exactly what it is.
You guys are home aloning it in the airport.
We are home aloning it with our carry-on luggage, right? So we don't have our suitcase. So we go all the way through and you take a train to get to the main terminal, right? And so we're running and then we get to the train. We're catching our breath. And we're standing right by the door. Same thing. Train opens up. And because at this point, it's all about that line at immigration, right? Oh. We're running up the escalator because we got it. And we were like the third person in line. We're like, yes. Oh. And the guy's like, how long are you staying? I'm like, 30 minutes. Long enough to pick up my bag. And he's like, okay. So he does our thing. There's five of us, so that doesn't go fast. And they go get there. Bag's not out yet. We're like, all right, that's fine. You know, we can wait for the bags. That means we're doing good. Bags come out. Four of them come out. And I'm like, where's the fifth one?
Of course.
And so now we're trying to figure out, do we just leave it? Like
which bag is it?
Which bag? What is in that bag? Can we leave it? And eventually it comes out. And we're like, all right, it's good. If we wheel it on our stuff. And then now we're like sprinting through the airport, right? We get out, try to find departures. We find departures. And at this point, I get a phone call from the gate agent. We got like 15 minutes or 20 minutes to door close, right?
Oh,
right. So I get this. She's like, are you here? I'm like, yes, I'm in security. Like, just wait for me. She's like, I can't hold it for you. I'm like, I am here. Like, just give me a minute. And she's like, okay, just hurry. I'm like, okay. Like, and we got super lucky. We got super blessed. Like, so we're obviously in a rush, right? Somebody asked what's going on. Like, our flight leaves in 15 minutes. Like, what can we do? And it's luckily the security guy pulled us aside and put us through the crew line where there was nobody at.
I love that.
And so we went through, we were the only people in the line. We were able to throw our stuff up, go through security. I go through first. I grab my bag and I'm like, I'm going to see you at the gate. And so like, I grab my bags and I just run to the gate. And at this point, the gate agent calls me again on my phone. And she's like, are you here? I'm like, yes, I'm two gates away. She's like, okay, because I can't hold it for you. And I'm like,
I'm here. I'm
two gates away. And so I come up and then she's printing out our boarding passes. And she's like, are you all here? I'm like, yes, we're all here. She's like, I don't see all five of you.
This is conversations I've had.
They're here. And so we all get on. And then we get on and the flight attendants. And I love our flight attendants. They do a great job, right?
Yeah.
But the very first thing out of their words is like, you shouldn't have scheduled your connection that tight.
Like,
I'm like, I know. And then like, where are you seating? I'm like, I have no idea. Here's my tickets. But we made it. It was great. Like it was 50 minutes from the time we blocked in to the time the door closed. on the next airplane, clearing customs and picking up her bags.
Wow. And picking up the bags. Yeah. That's the key.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When she said that to you, you should have scheduled it. You should have said, you know what? After service, come see me. I got a great story for you.
Yeah, it was great. And so we got business class on the way home, which was great because it was time for bed. It was a 10 p.m. flight. We basically ate our dinner and passed out. And
well, and after all the excitement, yeah, I bet you guys are just ready to crash.
It was just crash. Yeah. And then
all that adrenaline's gone.
Yeah.
And it worked out too because, like, you know, we were jet lagged like crazy coming back to this time zone. So we got back to San Francisco, and lucky for us, Southwest had a flight that was delayed back to Denver. So instead of having to be staying a night in a hotel where we would not have slept because we were just woken up from our flight, we were able to catch the delayed flight and we were able to make it all the way home that night. So that the travel day was super crazy. It was three airlines, only one of which was ours. But
and all kinds of problems.
All kinds of problems. It was, but we all made it home, and we were all happy to be home, and we all got business class.
So that's the best thing.
It was worth it.
That's a good story.
It's great.
Well, it gives me hope too, because I've got three kids, and so it's like if you can do it, especially with special needs, like we could do it too.
Yeah.
But the thing is, I was as your story too, as well as now my kids are older, and they've had business class or been promised it. Like that's what they want.
Right.
So Tyler's kids, I feel like. Some of them can't even sit in business yet, so it's not even an option. So you can just be like, it doesn't matter, we're still going. But once they get older, they're like, actually, we don't want to go then. So just wait till that happens.
That is a thing, right? So the first time we sat in business class, we actually went to Hawaii because Hawaii is domestic. And so we could do it way before we were old enough to actually do it international because Hawaii is considered domestic. So there's no age limit. And so we're on a 777 to Hawaii, and it's only like 5 hours. We went from LA, right? It's only like 5 hours. But Alice is like, I'm never flying anything other than this. So like every time we fly, that's the question. Are we getting business class? They don't. I'm like, Alice, it's a 737. We don't have.
This is something. <South Africa.
laughs> it's not the same.
This is Albuquerque. Yeah. Right.
She's like, but I want business class.
It turns your kids bougie.
That's, like even so, when we went to Japan, we came up from Saipan, and so there were two first class seats available. It was on a 737, and I'm like, "Yes, Alice, you can have your first class."
See, and she can sit by herself. She'd be just fine.
That's exactly right.
Thank you for coming and sharing all this.
Yeah,
I appreciate it. And I wish our airline flew to Asia as much as yours did. So I'm jealous about that.
Yeah.
But I definitely want to go and. Do that tour. That sounds awesome.
It was amazing.
Yeah, that'd be really cool. So,
all right. Well, thank you very much for joining us, Chris.
Yes, this is fun.
I appreciate it. It's a great story. Some great stories.
Yeah, thank you.
If you want to get a hold of us, you can find us at the Non-Rev Lounge Podcast at gmail.com. And everyone, please stay safe. Bye.
This has been Non-Rev Lounge. This episode was sponsored by Staff Traveler, which is the number one app to get your non-rev loads. It is used by over 700,000 people from all airlines the world over and built to make your non-rev trips easy and stress-free. Sign up now for free at stafftraveler.com/non-rev lounge.
I'm kind of embarrassed to admit that I was a flight attendant during the smoking era.
That wasn't that long ago.
Thank you, Chris.
Were you also smoking as you were working?
No, but I was with on a cart with a guy, and he said to one of the passengers, "Hey, can I have a drag off that?" And he actually took a drag off a passenger's cigarette. I'm like, but I will tell you this: those people were the nicest and the most fun to wait on. The smokers.
Mm-hmm. Did you work the smoking section or the non-smoking section?
I'd prefer to work in the non-smoking, just so I didn't smell like that at the end of the flight.
But did everyone in the plane smell like it?
No, not really. Not like you did if you were working back there. Okay. But they were the most fun. Those passengers were the most fun.
Because they were relaxed.
Mm-hmm. And usually with smoking comes drinking.
But is it just cigarettes or was there also like weed?
No, weed. It was back when weed was no.
Oh, yeah. Weed was Nixon said no to that, right? Yeah. Was it?
Reagan was the big one who was anti-drugs. And look at us now. We're a hot mess. Sorry, too political. Cut that out.
What did, when you were a flight attendant and Abraham Lincoln was president, what was his policy?
He just wanted a good show.
A good show.
He wanted a special overhead bin for hats.
Oh, that's good.
And the extra legroom seats.
Yes. Carolyn and I had positive space tickets going to Recurrent. And I took the window and she had the aisle. And then this guy showed up and Carolyn immediately said, "Do you want the window or the aisle?" to him. And he goes, "Oh, I'd love the aisle." And so she scooched over next to me. And it turned out he was an EP and it was the last minute. He had to go to Dallas. So he jumped on that flight and he was so happy to have that aisle seat.
Wait, you were in the window?
So I was in the window. Uh huh.
And she offered your seat up?
Yeah, she sure did. She knows I'm an av geek.
Sorry, that's what I took away from that story.
Yes.
You made EP's day that she offered your seat.
That's okay. The two of them were chatting. I leaned over to him. I go, hey, how many times have you been married? And he just looked at me. He goes, three. And I go, oh, her too.
Twins.
That's funny.